Blog Talk Radio.
Live from Chili's Back Room, 1331 F Street in beautiful downtown Washington, D.C. As we are every Tuesday from 4 till 6 in the afternoon, I am blessed, as always, with my usual partners in crime, the Honorable Bob Hines, former Vice President of NBC for Government Affairs, former head of the National Association of Broadcasters, and former floor chief for... Did I get that one wrong, too?
Yeah, I was not...
You were not...
I was not the head of the NIA.
I should have just done your resume, because at this point I've done everything except ordain you Pope.
But I'm also Miss America.
Yeah, that's so true, yeah. Too. He's also a partner at Collings, Swift, and Hines. Did I get that one right this time?
In a former life, he was William Taylor.
Also with me, as always, is the former 8-term congressman from the 2nd Congressional District of Washington. Also a partner at Collings, Hines, or Collings, Swift, and Hines, the Honorable Congressman Al Swift. Al, welcome back.
Thank you. One day you're going to get all that all right. You
know? One day I will get that right.
Get that all right.
One day I will get that right. Also with me, as always, is, well, actually joining us right now, should be on the air, and we're going to bring him up, Ralph Winnie, are you on?
Hello.
Hey, Ralph, how you doing? Mahalo, brother.
Oh, I'm doing great. Glad to be with everybody. Look forward to coming back next week.
Well, we look forward to having you back here in Shelley's. Hope everything's good out there in Hawaii.
It's 80 degrees.
Oh, stop! Now you're just being mean. Now you're just being mean.
Well, you just come and visit.
Yeah, I know. So one of the things we're going to talk about real quick is there's a lot going on, but I also want to introduce one of our guests here at the round table here at Shelley's Back Room. He is a former member of law enforcement, former terror of the Florida airwaves. For those of you who are familiar with Florida radio might remember the old Ron and Ron show. It is an honor for me to call him friend. It is Frank the Bodyguard. Frank, how you doing, buddy?
I'm hanging in there. Harumph.
Harumph. Harumph. Remember, harumph. Harumph. We've got to keep a leash on him.
I'm ready to go.
Well, one of the things we wanted to talk about today, obviously dominating a lot of the news today, is this issue with WikiLeaks. They've just released a whole plethora of documentation out on the web. It is ranging anywhere from the for official use only classification all the way up to secret. But it seems to be coming out of State Department as opposed to DOD. For those who have not seen the documents include caricatures or personality descriptions of some major heads of states, including Chancellor Andrea Merkel. It includes President Hamid Karzai, of Afghanistan.
President Sakharov of
Sarkozy, President Sarkozy from France.
Berlusconi of Italy.
Of Italy. And I've got to tell you something. You know, you guys have been around this town for a long time. There's always been leaks going around. Is this a new era of leaks, or is this something that we're just seeing because we're in an age of high technology? Is this something we can expect to see more of?
Well, I think that it's more a matter of technology in this case. When you consider that the person who apparently is the one who had access to and leaked the materials, you're talking about an extremely low-ranking individual who somehow had access to it. I don't know why he had access, how he had access, whether it was something that was just a fluke in the equipment or there was a system breakdown or whatever, but the idea that such a low-level person as a, I think, what is it, a private
allegedly listening to Lady Gaga.
Yeah. How he could get a hold of this material and put it out is just astonishing. It's a terrible leak in our system. It's a hole someplace that we ought to fix.
So Al's enjoying his usual martini, cigar, and cup of soup. How's the soup today, by the way, Al?
The soup here is always wonderful.
Al, you've been around this town for many, many years. You've seen leaks come out, some strategically placed by the administration, some that have just been unwanted leaks that could do damage to either national security or diplomatic channels. How damaging are these WikiLeaks, and what can we do to counterbalance it?
I don't think we know how serious they are, because currently the media is all concentrating on the gossip. Now, these leaks could contain incredible quantities of very, very sensitive secret material, which will let other people see that could be very devastating to our defense, to our plans, and so forth. But what you're hearing argued on the air and in the blogs and on the table is, oh my, we've embarrassed the president of France. Oh my, we've embarrassed this person and that person. Well, the fact is, they probably have got files on some of our more prominent people that they could. I wouldn't be surprised if you could find in some more than one national capital racist remarks about our president, I suspect. So my point is that the gossip part of it, grow up, everybody does it. Everybody does send from their embassies to their capitals unflattering descriptions of the people they're working with. And that is embarrassing in a social situation. I do not see it as a matter of national defense. When we finally find out what information that is valuable to our national defense has been leaked, then we can assess how important this is.
And for those of you out in radio land, for the five or six that might be listening to us until we actually announce the fact on a broad scale that we're actually doing this radio show, our call-in numbers today are, as always, 619-638-8477. For those of you in the metropolitan San Diego area or Southern California, you can dial us at 619-638-8477. Ralph, you're still with us?
Yes. Go
Ralph,
ahead.
What kind of international issues are we going to have to contend with? You know, especially with the sensitivity. I mean, one of the big leaks that they have been focusing on in the media has been the issue of China re-looking at their policy towards the Korean Peninsula. Are the Chinese now going to be somewhat pushing back as far as how they deal with us and what they may be open? Is this going to lock them down, or do they see this as it's happened to everybody?
Well, I think the Chinese are going to be very careful about what information they're willing to openly disclose. This has never been a good thing for the U.S. to have these sort of leaks. Even if you're just embarrassing people on a social level, it will lead to compromising documents being released that could affect our troops and our people in the battlefield. And we've got to get a rein on these people. Other countries are able to really put the clamp down and make sure that compromising materials are not released that could damage the credibility and integrity of their systems. I think the Chinese recognize that the Korean situation will get out of control if they don't come in and do something right away, and they know that they can put a put a lot of pressure on the North Koreans to back down. And I think you're going to see them moving in that direction.
And we've got a caller from the 404, which I believe is down Atlanta way.
Hey.
Georgia, 404 area code. Caller, you're on the air with Congressman Al, Bob Hines, Justin Russell, Ralph Winnie, and Frank the Bodyguard.
Hey, how you doing?
Fine. How are you?
I'm doing all right. I was just calling to tell you, I think you have a very good show on out here.
Well, we appreciate that. Thank you very much for listening. Do you have a comment or a call on these WikiLeaks?
Well, no, I don't have a comment. I'm just going to tell you, keep up the good work.
Well, thank you very much. We hope that you'll continue to listen to us. We appreciate all your support, and we look forward to bringing you years and years of good radio, at least from an Inside the Beltway perspective. Caller, we appreciate your call today. Let's go back to...
Bob and I don't have years and years.
Oh, stop. Now, you see, that's not cool. Why would you do that? So the question comes up now.
Speak for yourself.
Bob...
You're older than I am.
Yeah, no kidding. Now we're comparing age. That's good.
He is younger than I am.
Yeah, really? Really?
Yeah.
Wow, you've done it well, Al.
about 3 months.
Wow. Bob, legally, as the attorney counsel for Backroom Politics, legally, is there anything that the administration can do? We saw Eric Holder literally trying to tap dance around the issue. They're talking about invoking the Espionage Act of 1917. They're even talking about changing the law and trying to go back retroactive to prosecute. Does the administration have any legal recourse against WikiLeaks?
It probably depends upon the substance of what is in the materials. Now, we know about some of the embarrassing comments made about various other political leaders around the world. That really is not a matter of legality. That's just, we may be embarrassed, they may be pissed off, but it doesn't really get to the point of espionage or anything of that nature. If any of the documents that are leaked by this supposedly by this young man, if they are found to talk about troop movements, equipment movements, national policy decision making that is not yet released, those are questions that come much more close to the area of legal recourse. Yes.
Okay.
But on what we have seen today, I would think it's mostly a matter of embarrassment for everybody, and I think probably most of our friends overseas and our own government would rather they all go away.
As the minority of the group here, the listeners will learn that I'm basically the antagonist and the politically incorrect member of this group. My question to you and the rest of the panel is, and Hawaii, mahalo, from a haole, when are we going to get off of our laurels, stand up, and try this person for espionage? We are at war. Both administrations of state and such, unless I'm wrong. When are we going to actually invoke it and try these persons?
Well, I agree. I think we should have already done it. There was a lot of talk after the first go-around about trying this person. But he hasn't seemed to have necessarily crossed the line in order for those kind of proceedings to take place. If this was in China or in other countries, he would have been tried for treason, because a lot of what he's released, while personally embarrassing, also touches on the issue of national security.
All right, well, we're at the quarter past the hour. It's quarter after four here on the East Coast. We're going to take about a two-minute break, and we'll be back. We'll continue talking about this WikiLeaks situation. Here, live from Shelley's Back Room, this is Backroom Politics.
Ha ha ha!
live from Shelley's Back Room, 1331 F Street, in the heart of the nation's capital, the premier capital place to be seen, the premier cigar bar on the East Coast, Shelley's Back Room. We're going to talk a little bit about the WikiLeaks. Al, I'm going to have you take over the reins for a few seconds and moderate us a little bit. Joining us from Hawaii, as he usually does on Tuesdays, not from Hawaii, Dr. Ralph Winnie from the Asian Pacific Center. Bob Hines, Al Swift, and Frank the Bodyguard with us here today. Al, take the reins for a sec.
Well, I'd like to start off with what Frank was talking about, because I suspect that Frank's question is a question that is echoed by a great many Americans. And if I understand what you're saying correctly, is when are we going to stop being kind of Nelly about this whole thing and hang this guy by his thumb? Now, my question to you is, do you mean without due process of law?
I say use the due process of law that we have and have had in place, but do something. It's been almost a year we've been hearing about WikiLeaks. If I was to go, I was talking to Al earlier, if I drive down 123 and make the wrong turn by the Culinary Institute of America, I'm in jail, okay? And I'm just driving by. I turned down the wrong road. This gentleman, we don't know yet, and that's the problem. He's put lives in danger. He's put assets. People that would have turned are not going to do it. If we can't keep a minimal amount of information out of the public eye, we were also discussing earlier, if we knew one-tenth of what went on in the diplomatic arena, we would probably stay home. I understand. I use due process, charge him under military force. None of this taking him out of Gitmo and having him in a civilian court. These should be military courts. He's in the military. I don't want, no offense, I don't want some Johnny Cochran coming along, and because they didn't dot an I, they didn't talk to him in a nice way for him to get off.
Okay.
So, yes, I agree. In answering the question,
okay,
due process, let's stand up and say, okay, treason.
And I can't imagine that many people would disagree with the if he is convicted. I think there may be some disagreement in several steps on how you get there. But it seems to me that if we concentrate too much on getting this guy, we will take our eye off of a much bigger problem. If this guy can get this kind of information out of our government, it suggests to me that we have a huge technological problem that will only get worse, and it could change the whole nature of international relationships. We would start having to write nice little letters from the ambassador to the Secretary of State, and they'd almost have to get into a soundproof room to be able to speak
the
their minds.
The cone of silence, yes.
Yeah, the cone of silence.
Now, what
and that would change how we do and how everybody does international relations greatly. I think that's a bigger question than what we do to this guy, although I have no problem with him being dealt with very severely.
In a like-minded situation, the gentleman that I'm having a typical brain fart here,
I hope you find it. Will you be on?
I just turned 54, so didn't.
Oh, yeah. So Bob and I at 75 are going to really feel sorry
for you. Yeah, we
have. Yeah, poor.
We feel so sorry for you that we'll buy you another drink if you need it.
The Bob, do you think that would it be smart to guess that, because as Frank points out, that this has been around for some time, that everybody hasn't been sitting around in the State Department and the Pentagon flat-footed doing nothing? Don't you suspect that there has been a lot of work done that we don't know about to try and figure out how to handle not only this situation, but the generic problem?
I guess we would certainly.
Well, I think one of the issues is that it exposes the U.S. to the fact that we're way behind in cyber technology and dealing with potential cyber attacks or threats from other sources.
Being behind in technology, but a point I made to Al earlier is, where was the supervisor watching this kid take this Lady Gaga DVD, allegedly? There's a ton of, as we find out now, there's a lot of information that's given out, and he was a lowly private at the time. So where's the supervisor? Why hasn't that been brought up? Because someone let him do this. Someone let him bring that piece of equipment on post in Iraq or Iran, wherever he was, and did not check it coming out. If I'm the supervisor, hindsight is 20/20. I would have said, okay, let me see the CD, let me have my text analyze it. If it's legit, it may take a day or 2 days, we'll get it back. That piece of equipment, remember, do you think they're going to let any more iPods or CD players, DVD art readers and writers on post anymore? No.
And I agree that is not unimportant. But I still am suggesting that what is more important is to get at the fundamental problem of, are we going to be able to stop this? Are we going to be able to stop it technologically? And are we going to get the cooperation from our allies in doing so?
How about our computers being transferred over to China for a couple of hours or a couple of weeks ago? Have you ever heard about that?
No, I don't.
Some of our military computers were redirected through China for some ungodly reason. I mean, things like that.
Frank, I want your source on that.
Okay, I'll reach into my bag of tricks and pull it out.
If that's what I'm afraid of.
The fundamental question here, it seems to me, is a systems breakdown.
Correct.
I don't know if it's technological or whether it's personnel structure.
I think it's a combination of human error and technology. Lack of detail. Pardon me?
And now the question is, how do we fix it?
Yeah. It's got to, the human factor has to be picked up about 20%. You know?
What do you mean the human factor has to be kicked up?
The detail, the checks and balances that let him bring that piece of equipment that is, if you go into, some of the government agencies here, you're not allowed to bring your phone in the building anymore. Back when they were bricks, that wasn't an issue. When the technology had gone, I've got a pen camera that'll record color for 8 hours that I can just wear a video. Or it's physical.
But I'm saying we got to figure out how to stop it, and then what I understand you're saying on is how do we implement it? Is that correct?
Well, we need to definitely train more people in the technology field. Other countries like China and India are graduating more people in the technical fields than the U.S. and that puts us at a great disadvantage in the global arena, especially in areas involving national security, where we expose ourselves to the threat of cyber attacks and computer breakdowns that allow other countries to be able to penetrate our system.
Well, if we can all agree that somewhere within the realm of what we've just talked about, from Frank wanting to get this guy and make an example of him, to wanting stringent situations to prevent it from happening, to my concern of how do we figure out how to fix it, to the months get the people that we need to do it and find solutions. Within all of that, probably agree. I still feel that what we're going to be looking at is a field day on the part of the media, looking at the least important, most embarrassing, flamboyant things. Oh my God, they found that the king of such and such had a sandwich with a girlfriend at the local hotel. Instead of focusing the public's attention on what we've been talking about. And I think that also likely to find some of the Congressional Oversight Committees trundling down those headline-grabbing alleys than really trying to learn, as the Science and Tech Committee, they did have some connections. Is the technological problem? What is the technological solution? The problem is that it's not out there. It's not
the monster.
You were breaking up. Can you repeat that?
That it's ever evolving. The minute we find for this week, some kids sitting in a private school somewhere that has just developed a code. It took our government and its experts 6 months and $10 million to build this firewall. There's always some kid, some savant, that is sitting there and just wrote a code that makes it obsolete.
Well,
it has to be continual.
Obviously, but the fact is that we need to find solutions, and the nature of the beast is that we'll have to find another solution and another solution.
Well, I can guarantee there won't be any more iPods or CD players. It won't be any of those solutions.
We've been doing that with bank robbers for decades.
What happened?
But it's also clear to me that we have to develop personnel. Activity. We obviously have to be more careful about who has access, because right now we obviously have access going to people who we don't even know what they're doing, and we have far too much of it. It's surprising to me that someone at this young man's status was able to get control of so much material. It's astonishing to me that the system didn't somehow beep or do something that would tell people above him something's going on down there and it's wrong.
Well, the people above him may tacitly be approving of his activities as a way to generate newsworthy articles and publicity for their newspapers.
Ron, by George, our boss is back.
And you know what? Just in time to bring us to the break, we're going to take a break. It's 4:30 here on the East Coast. It's 1:30 Pacific time. What time is it out there in Hawaii, Mahalo?
8 hours.
It's 11:30.
Oh, good. It's like lunchtime.
Some yummy yogurt.
Well, I've got a surprise for everyone when I come back.
We're going to leave you again with the soulful sounds of Kid Ory. See, I got it right.
No, you didn't. You got it wrong again.
Kid Ory. Excuse me. There it is. Stay with us. We'll be back in 2 minutes. This is Backroom Politics Live from Shelley's Backroom in Washington, D.C.
We need an official backroom.
down, 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 down.
Erskine.
Bowles. Bowles commission suggested a freeze for 3 years. So
how are they literally going to get away without having dissension in the ranks? I mean,
they are going to have dissension in the ranks.
Is that going to lead to a loss?
Well,
where are they going to go?
Where would the government workers go? With those benefits, with that job security, it's like saying, well, look, I'm being facetious, but you can't buy that other house or that boat. You just have to wait 2 years.
But, I mean, literally, I mean, and it's not so much the SES ranks that we're going to be concerned about. It's the rank and file at the GS 9, 11, 13 level that are pretty much keeping government running. How does Obama justify this?
I think that this better be the first shoe. You know, I am assuming that it can now drop another shoe so that the federal employees are not the only ones making a sacrifice. He makes more people mad, to be sure, but he also is showing some balance. And believe me, if we're going to do anything serious about government spending, we're going to end up with virtually everybody annoyed at it. So if he just stops with the employees, he's created a hornet's nest with the unions, and he's given them the why are we the only ones who have to sacrifice.
Well, here's a question for you. Will, whether it's AFSCME who's going to be a pit bull on this, whether it's the LBIO teachers, there's going to be fallout from this. Can Congress itself step in and say, whoa, time out, before you pull this trigger, we want some data on this?
I think that's the most likely thing for Congress to do is, as always, nothing. And they'll throw bricks in the road and prevent him and try and prevent him from doing this so they can go out and take bows and then go back to giving speeches about how we got to cut spending.
Bob, what is the legal aspect of Obama doing this? Is this going to create a myriad of lawsuits? Is this going to just burn up the judicial system saying, hey, you know, you can't do this, I'm a federal employee, or is there any legal precedence for this?
Well, this is an area that I don't even pretend to be an expert in, but I can't imagine anything that would prohibit him from doing it as a legal matter. I mean, after all, he is the head of the executive department. We're talking about employees that are in the executive department. And he probably has the authority to, as he is also doing, he's also giving them, I believe, a 3% bonus. It will be payable shortly. So it's going to be, the employees are going to get a 3% bonus. He has a right to do that, and he also has a right to say, you don't have any salary increase for the next 2 years. I don't think there's a legal question. I think it's more really a question of, it's a political statement. He's trying to, I think, in effect, say to the public, I'm serious about this. And I'm sure the general public, it's a good thing.
Al, you're a member of Congress, you're in the majority or even the minority, what stance do you take? Do you just back off of it, or do you actually insert Congress and have them be proactive and look like a hero to the federal employees?
I will tell you what I would hope I would do, and that is recognize that this is the first time any elected official at the federal level has actually taken a step to cut spending in a way that is not going to be politically popular. Popular for some, but essentially it's not going to be popular. And I would hope that I would, if I were still in Congress, that I would join him and support it. Now, none of us can tell exactly how we're going to act if somebody puts a gun in our face. You know, you would hope you would be brave. It's going to be an enormous impetus from every block of this government. He's got a mailman, you know. You've got a ton of federal employees in every congressional district. And in my old district, I had a couple of Army bases, so I'd be okay there.
We're talking about the civilians that are key components.
With the military, but the agricultural agents, the postal workers, the people in the local Social Security office, all of those federal agencies that are spread through virtually every community in the country are going to be writing letters to their congressman, and it's going to be a brave congressman that would support the president. I hope we will see some statesmanship and some bravery.
With the actual
area, happens if these federal employees just decide they're going to go on strike and basically, in effect, shut the government down?
Say that again, Ralph. I'm sorry.
Worst case scenario, what if the federal government employees decide they're just going to go on strike and or shut the government down? you remember the air traffic controllers doing, in effect, doing that back in the late 70s, early 80s.
Yeah, but it was Ronald Reagan who took the initiative and said, fine, you guys don't want to come to work, I'll fire you, and I'll find people who will do the job. Does a similar situation happen? I mean, in air traffic control, although it was a matter of transportation safety, does Obama take that hardcore position and say, hey, if you don't want it, I will find people who do?
That's the question. That's the issue.
Al, what do you think? Does
again, I think we're looking at the first stage of what I hope is a multi-stage thing. If the president has done this and then plans to stop, he's doomed. But if this is the first step of a series of steps he's going to take that will demonstrate that this is going to be a fair and balanced... My God, did I use those words? Oh, my God. I'm going to slap myself as soon as we're off the air. If it's a program that looks like it's going to be treating people equally, then I think he may get some support. But I said on a program, on this program, two programs ago, I think, that somebody, some politician, is going to need to step up and sacrifice. And I think that what the president should consider doing is saying, either I'm not going to run again, or I'm not going to take any of that into consideration, and I'm going to do what has to be done. And if that were to occur, then I think he's in a vastly better political position to get it done.
My earlier statement was, with the recent slacking that the powers being took in the polls, do you think this, I'll throw this out to the table in Hawaii, do you think that this step, by the president, is going to come back and stand up and say, look, okay, I believe he's a one-term president anyway, and a lot of people disagree, but this is just something that he should have done earlier. Now it's kind of forced on him. Is this going to force his hand in the election?
Well, this is something that George Bush should have done, probably George the first. And maybe we go back to FDR. We want to start figuring out the fact is, the time appears to have come when we are going to try to do something, and this is the first honest, straightforward, hurts in the gut kind of thing that any elected official at the federal level has offered to get the ball rolling.
Do you think that there has been a different turnout in the elections recently that he would have made this step, or would have still had all of the support behind him? Now he doesn't.
I think he would have been more likely to do it had he been more popular. Remember, he has taken on AFSCME. AFSCME is not only one of the largest unions, it is one of the most politically effective unions. There are a lot of unions out there that huff and puff, but you just don't need to pay too much attention because they're not very effective. That's not true with AFSCME.
I would just say that you're going to see AFSCME taking a very active role in rallying the troops and getting them geared up for a fight on this. So, now the question is, you know, AFSCME was a big play in helping getting Obama elected in 2008. Has he alienated AFSCME enough to at least have them start shopping around for a new candidate, Bob?
I wouldn't think so. Not yet. I wouldn't think so.
Al?
There's another point I want to make here that I think is important. Think about it this way. Let's finish with the AFSCME. Go ahead, Jeff.
Yeah, go ahead. Al, what do you think?
I agree. I wanted to, not yet, as I've been saying since we started this discussion. We've just seen the first stage, and I am assuming there are things to follow, some which the president may have lined up, and others which will be reactions that he can't anticipate. But we've got a way to go. For example, can the Republicans now continue to talk about cutting spending and not come up with proposals that are disturbing to some of their constituents. They can come up with ones that are disturbing to Democrats' constituents, but can they do what the president did? And that is make a cut that is necessary and pick his own people. I would like to see Mitch McConnell decide who he's going to savage in this situation.
Well, that was precisely where I was going. I think now that the president has laid this on the table, I think he is in a stronger position to say to the Republicans, okay, now what are you going to put on the table?
Right.
And I think that that puts the Republicans in a situation where they're going to have to, they're certainly going to support the president, but they can't just say, but we're still in the same place we were before on everything else.
And if you can get, a kind of bidding war going on, who is most courageous and most willing to cut things, I mean, you might actually get some cuts done.
One of the things that has been done in the state of Hawaii to save money was to furlough a certain percentage of state workers. Every other Friday, state workers were given a furlough day or a day off,
right,
to save the state money. I'm wondering if that's an option that Obama may end up deciding to encourage on the federal level.
Well, it's definitely an option, Ralph. I would say that, you know, we look at the other states. I know Florida's done it. I know the California's had a huge furlough program.
Now,
a lot of the major states are doing that, and they're looking at that as a possibility. That's a good question, and that may be an option that we may see President Obama do, is do it off a furlough versus just doing it summarily as a pay cut or a pay freeze. We have a caller on the line from the 727 area code. 727, the Bay Area. You're on the air with Dr. Ralph Winnie, the Honorable Bob Hine, Al Swift, and Frank the Bodyguard. Caller? Caller? No caller. Caller from the 727.
The connection's a little fuzzy.
Okay. Caller, you're on the air. If you hear us, call back in, please. We'd love to hear your opinion on this.
It hasn't been brought up, but I'll throw it out to you guys. Is anyone in the Tea Party a factor in this decision, or will it use it as a leverage against the incumbent?
I would suspect that Tea Party members would find this to be a very positive move on the part of the president.
I agree.
The problem is going to be when the Tea Party is asked, what are you willing to put on the table? And we may find that out relatively shortly, because I think this particular proposal by the president is going to be popular with the public at large, who see that the president is trying to do something. Now, the next question is, who else is going to be asked to put something on the table? I can see the president certainly asking the Republicans to do so, and they're going to have to take a look at what they're going to do, because you're not going to get any place if it's only the Democrats or only the Republicans doing it. This is the time when they got to join hands and jump off the cliff together.
I feel he was forced to.
Absolutely, and I think Bob you raised a good point.
Oh, I'm sorry, what was that, Ralph? Ralph, go ahead.
Bob has raised a good point. The Tea Party leaders have been under pressure from the media and from Democrats to say exactly what they're going to cut and to propose active solutions to this problem. And Obama has sort of taken the bull by the horns, and it's going to be interesting to see what the Tea Party has to say about it. I think they'd be smart to support this.
We're going to take a break right now. The caller on hold, 727, stay with us. Top of the hour. This is Backroom Politics Live from Shelley's Back Room. Stay with us.
Okay.
Florida. Let's go to the switchboard. We see if we can get back the caller. The caller from the 727 area code, you're on with Backroom Politics live from Shelley's Back Room.
Hi, guys. I'm actually calling from Atlanta, Georgia, even with the Tampa Bay area code.
Okay. Atlanta, thanks for calling in. What's your comment?
Well, my comment is personally, and I think a large portion of the Tea Party and conservatives are not as interested in how much are you cutting as in what are you cutting. A two-year moratorium on raises for a job that the federal government doesn't even have no business doing in the first place really doesn't make a difference. So if I was a conservative, I would look at offering up what parts of the federal government that are currently being paid for should be done by individual states and figuring out a way to remove that funding and send that funding back to the state.
Okay, caller, that's a great point. Appreciate that. Al, our caller is talking about, taking the money, putting it back into the states, letting the states distribute it or have the states deal with the money issue. Is that a possibility? Can they put the onus back on the states?
That's just moving the problem around. What state has got enough money to be able to handle this?
You guys are breaking up. If you're waiting on me to talk, I can't hear you at all anymore.
And we're back live from Jelly's back room. Wednesdays we're going to hardwire for this place. We got to talk to Bob about that. Thanks for staying with us again. We're live with Frank and somewhere out there in Radio Land, Ralph Winnie is joining us from Hawaii. Dr. Winnie, if you hear us, come on back in. We're back live. Going back to what we were talking about.
I want to apologize to Ralph for calling him Ron twice. And I want to apologize to the bodyguard for all the things I've ever called him.
a lot of which we don't I want to talk about the situation again with the three something we're dealing with. It's obviously something that's going to come into question as far as how the continuity of operations, continuity of government continues. Finishing up on this topic real quick before we go into our next topic is what is the message that the administration gets out to help ease some of the tension that's going to be out there as a result of this, well, arguably gutsy out of the White House. Bob, what message if you're in the administration, what message do you get out there that helps alleviate some of the tension?
From the standpoint of the large, I think the president, there are things they do that are going to be difficult. This is just the first step. There are a number of other steps that are going to have to be taken by the administration, by the Congress, by the government as a whole, and we're going to have to work together on it. Everybody isn't going to like everything we do. Everybody is going to, some people are going to feel on other things we do, other people will feel the bite. But taken as a whole, we have to find a way to resolve our deficit problem, get our finances in order, and that means that all of us, in one way or another, are going to have to sacrifice a little bit so that the country as a whole can move forward, we can get our house in order, and we can get our economy back to full throttle where everybody who wants a job has a job, and we have a growing economy. That's what we're going to try for, that's what we're going to do, and this is the first step.
Alan, you agree with Bob, is there actually a message that the Obama administration needs?
Well, one, I agree with Bob, that's one thing. I think another thing that would help is that one of the reasons this is so popular with the general public is that there has been, in my judgment, a myth for as long as I can, that most federal government employees are not very competent, don't work very hard, don't contribute very much. In my experience, working with bureaucracy, particularly on some helping problems back home, I have found them to be hardworking, quite competent. You disagree with the basic person that is doing the day-to-day desk work on these things.
Meeting between the leadership and the White House, it's apparently from the news media, was there's definitely some the Democrats are still divided internally. There's still a divide between the Democrats in Congress and the White House, and the Republicans are still out. In fact, you're talking about improving for the rich.
The Republicans are not ready to make any compromises. It seems to me that the Democrats have done which was to eliminate the tax cut. The tax on that, even on the brains. And I, as a Democrat, am kind of waiting for what the Republicans are going to put on the table on that.
The banner, at least pass branches to. Or to not only Congress and Democratic members of Congress, but also the White House.
Still trying to decide how to proceed. Senator Schumer suggested that they move the cutoff from tax relief to families at $150,000, but at $1 million, which means that there'd be far fewer. I mean, that would cost, instead of costing $700 billion over 10 years, it would cost something like $400 billion. Much less. So Democrats are clearly offering things. Now, those are not official positions, but those things are being put on the table. Now, from the standpoint of the Republicans, I think that at some point they may have to decide, you know, how firm they stand on their position, whether they're willing to move in some way to show some give. I don't know what's going to happen. I don't think the Republicans know what they're going to do yet, quite, because obviously this is the Democrats have taken some steps trying to show that they're being responsible, trying to solve the problem.
Right now,
I think in trying to do this, John Boehner. The only purpose for the rest of this Congress is that's his only goal. And I know John to some than Mitch McConnell, who I think has no intention of cooperating with any Democrats on anything, including welcoming the dawn.
Very close to the does Boehner see a threat on this issue?
I commit its oaths that worked on our, Tea Party members. Very firm views on taxation, economics, deficit, etc. So it's going to be difficult for the Republicans. Are going to have to work pretty hard to find some middle ground on some issues, because I think that the leadership would like to be in some places where they can agree if we can find work up help reduce deficit, helps to cut the costs. Those things are going to be important. Now, this is the very beginning. We're not even to the fact where these new 80 members in the House have even been sworn in. That comes in a month. The fact of the matter is, we're already with the Republican Party's interest as Mr. Boehner and Mr. Cantor and the rest of the leaders try to find a way to responding to their own members.
Congress, does that argument coming out of the Republican side, does that hold there in your view?
I don't know. In the 30 or 40 years that I've heard, I just don't think it's worth it. If most of the time, unserious, even though they have business what does Nancy Pelosi think about that? That's while Boehner, if he can wrestle with his right wing, could be a more positive person. Makes me sick.
Well, Ralph, let me pose a question out to you, you in Hawaii.
Okay. There's some technical difficulties. I'll try and answer. Hello? Hello? I'm here, but it's skipping. I can barely hear anybody.
All right.
Let me call back in. Hello? Let me I'll call back in.
The tax issue is going to be an issue with foreign trade. 3 minutes. We will be back here live. Stay with the video.
No.
This is Backroom Politics Live from Shelley's Backroom. We are here with the Honorable Bob Hines, the Honorable Al Swift, Frank the Bodyguard, and joining us from Hawaii, as always, well, at least for the past 2 weeks, is Dr. Ralph Winnie. Dr. Winnie, can you hear us?
Yes, I can. This is perfect.
Good, good, good. Ralph, one of the questions I had for you before we ran into the technical difficulties and went to the break is, how is the tax cuts going to affect foreign trade? There's got to be an implication in whether we get into a deficit internally or we offset that with a trade deficit externally with our trade partners. Does the Bush tax cuts actually help out foreign trade as a whole?
Well, I think our corporate tax rate is one of the highest in the world, second only to Japan, and that's made it put us at an extreme disadvantage compared to other countries like China and Russia, which have fairly low corporate tax rates, or even countries in Western Europe, which have higher domestic tax rates but very low international corporate tax rates. And that's enabled many countries to have to be able to do international business in a very effective manner. I think the Bush tax cuts are going to encourage more trade and investment. One of the things that Bush did, he allowed people to transfer money back from foreign accounts into the U.S. at a very, very low tax rate for a specific period of time back in 2005, and that generated a tremendous amount of revenue that came back into the U.S. I don't know if that's something the Obama administration will consider doing, but it was something that was very effective. You had all this money that was being held offshore now finally coming back into the U.S. and generating a lot of business. So this remains to be seen. I certainly think tax cuts are very effective. We do have to get our fiscal situation in order. We have to stop borrowing and spending and have got to encourage policies that will allow for savings and direct investment. And the bottom line is jobs. How do we bring in companies from other countries into the U.S. that will help create jobs in this country? And I think the key is to work with the Chinese, the Indians, the Russians, and encourage them to bring their businesses into the U.S. There are many Chinese companies that come into the U.S., but they're very concerned that they won't be welcome. And that's not a good perception of people to have about our country.
Well, that's a great point, Ralph. When we look at the meeting that happened today, going back to days and administration, is this something that the Obama administration, Bob, should have done a lot sooner? Is this something that is a little too late? Or is this the right timing with the new Republican administration coming in on the House side?
Well, it strikes me that without the election, we might not be sitting here tonight talking about the meeting that was held today in the White House. We might not have a report coming from the Bowles-Simpson committee, because there wouldn't be any. And the president was very busy in the last year with health care and other things he was pushing. So this may be as soon as this may have taken all of that to get us to where we are today, where the president is making a move that will at least focus people on the seriousness of the issue and the fact that the administration is serious about something, trying to find a solution. That's all to the good.
Al, is this something that you saw when you were in Congress? Is this unusual, the approach that the White House has taken? You know, some were calling it at one point the Slurpee Summit, which arguably is a strange name for anything, referring to the show Glee on Fox. Does this summit, as the White House is calling it, provide, or is this something historical, or is this something that you experienced in Congress?
There have been this kind of bipartisan meetings on a variety of issues under a variety of presidents. This one, I think, is unusual in the fact that we are in much more stringent, acrimonious times. When they took on Social Security and they set up a bipartisan commission to work on that, Democrats disagreed enormously on Social Security, but did not have the kind of personal animosity and what have you that's going on. You did not have a minority leader of one of the bodies saying that his primary goal is to defeat the president. So, in that sense, I think it's unusual. And I hope it will lead to something. But one meeting does not a victory make. So this is a start. We'll see if it goes anywhere.
Well, one of the things that I wanted to bring up in our next segment when we come back from break is I want to talk about the committee that the president formed that was jointly held by Congress. Does this meeting today, does it in fact counteract trying to do or supplemental, or is it some sort of tool or arrangement for everybody to come together with one
at all, but also not trying very hard not to look like he's bringing up the rear on it. And I think that's very, very smart. I think it's smart politically, but I think it's also smart in terms of the negotiation that will go on. He's already at the table. He's waiting now for the Bowles Commission to come to the table, and they may bring the other ones to the table. The meeting in the White House, I don't think had a table. Maybe it did, but I don't think it was coming to the table in the sense that you normally talk
about. Bob, from a Republican standpoint, was it coming to the table?
I think it is it's a good thing that the new leadership of the Congress and the president sat down. I think it's a good thing that the president had something to offer. I think it is a good thing that the Congress calls the Republicans to think about what they're doing. I think it is a good thing that tomorrow Mr. Bowles and Mr. Simpson are going to unveil what they've got. And I believe Alice Rivlin and an economist whose name I cannot remember have also offered another proposal of a solution of how to get from where we are today in a deep economic to a better economic situation. All those things are in play. It's just good about people sitting down and talking.
Ralph, out in the light, in your political viewpoint, does this show a continuity of government? Does it show that, you know, with the leadership in Congress meeting at the White House, does that have any impact on maybe any of the future views or any of the future positions that any of the foreign governments might take in dealing with us, particularly in the Asian Pacific arena?
Well, I think Obama is doing the right thing by reaching out to the new Congress, trying to get a consensus on certain issues. And that will certainly have an impact on the perception of the U.S. by foreign countries. It's important that we come to the table with a united front with a certain set of priorities and issues when dealing with the world community. Because so much of what's happened in the U.S. is there's been too much disagreement and backbiting and no coherent policies. And it just causes confusion on the world stage, especially when you're trying to get treaties passed. And when you make commitments to a foreign country and then a new administration comes in and they want to change things at the last minute.
You know, one of the things that we talked about in one of our first shows was the idea of the First Congress Society, and that's bringing back civility to politics. You know, we've seen actors now getting involved. Richard Dreyfuss has now been involved in doing the talking head tour about bringing civility back to Congress. I don't know what basis his credibility is, but it's a good position to have, and we might want to try and get him on after the first of the year. But does this represent a possible new wave in civility, in compromise, in some of the components of what we believe our First Congress Society is about, or is this just a red herring? Bob?
Much too early to tell.
Al?
What I have noticed, and I think they are small beginnings, is that you've seen a number of things. The John Stewart
rally
on the Mall was another example. No one of these is going to be the magic wand that is going to bring the genie out of the bottle, but you're beginning to see interest in talking about disability. The Today program even had a little segment on just the civility between citizens, not necessarily on politics. So I think civility may be becoming a new concept to be discussed, and in that sense, it will move these things along. Whether it's enough to move it far enough, again, is absolutely remains to be seen.
Ralph, what do you think? Is this in fact the new coming together in civility, or is this just a dog and pony show coming out of the White House?
Well, I think it's a step in the right direction. Only time will tell whether we're moving all down the right track. But I think the elections have indicated that the American people are fed up with incivility and personal negative attacks, and they want the parties to come together and create policies that will provide jobs and economic security. And I think down the line, if this is effective, it will be a very good thing as far as encouraging people to get into politics. There are so many smart, wonderful people, very accomplished in their field, that would make great politicians, that have decided they don't want to get involved. They're afraid that their families are going to be impacted negatively by all of the personal attacks, that it's just safer not to get into politics, and that's a shame.
Okay. Well, we're at the bottom of the hour. We're going to take another quick break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about the new Economic Commission, some of the findings on some of the reporting that's been coming out of the Hill for that, on the Bulls. And who's the other half of that commission? I keep going. Alan Simpson, the Simpson Bulls.
Very good man.
Yeah, well, we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about some of the issues that are popping out. Stay with us again. This is Back.
Can I just make a little comment?
Of course.
We're sitting here with a television set behind us with Glenn Beck sitting there, and he's silent. He's just there waving his arms and his truck, and he looks like the longest-winded weatherman who's lost his mind.
For the conservative side, I'm calling my, I raised my sign issue again. I again reiterate the fact that if they hadn't lost everything that they lost, the Democratic side would not be in this position, we would not be having these discussions, because they were basically forced. Both sides say what they need to say to get elected. I agree. But I believe this is finally, people get pissed off and finally say, you know what? Okay, I can sit down and talk to them civilly about it. That's what this is about. That's what the Democrats have finally learned, that, okay, yeah, we were in power. Well, guess what? It got taken away because the people that elected everybody and you out, the people that spoke, not just a bunch of ideas wandering around
the Congress. You might be able to get that.
We'll be back in Backroom Politics live from Shelley's Back Room on Blog Talk Radio. Stay with us.
Thank you.
And we're back live from Shelley's back room in downtown Washington, D.C. Back from politics, live from Shelley's back room with Frank the Bodyguard joining us. Also joining us is Ralph. Welcome back.
Hello.
Ralph.
Great to be back.
We lost Ralph. Ralph?
I'm here.
Okay, well, welcome back for our final segment. One of the things we want to talk about is we want to talk about the Economic Commission, the Simpson-Bowles Commission. Alan Simpson, the great statesman from
Wyoming,
and then Erskine Bowles, the former Secretary of the Treasury.
Chief of Staff to Mr. Clinton.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I need a fact checker. We got to have an intern. We really got to get an intern. We really do.
I know a girl.
There we go. So when we talk about what's coming out of the Simpson-Bowles Committee, there's a lot of findings that have been hinted out, dropped, released. Al, I ask you the question: is what are some of the big ticket items that you see coming out of the commission, and what effects it going to have as we go forward in trying to heal our wounded economy?
Let me deal with one aspect of what you said first. I think one of the big effects is going to be that while the president has picked one group that's going to have to give, I think the Bowles Commission is going to point out a whole bunch more, and the federal employees are going to feel a little less like they're the only ones being picked up, because it's going to be a sweeping across the board thing. If you're in favor of education, I expect you to be surprised. If you're in favor of more defense spending, you're going to be disappointed. If you're in favor of you name it, you're going to be disappointed, because this is a commission that does not have the run. Definition of what needs to be cut, taxes need to be raised, what needs to be done in this fiscal budget. And I think that, in and of itself, is going to be a huge advantage in the debate, because it's going to make it much more difficult for people to say, you know, well, everybody but me. And remember the great old line from the Senate Finance chairman from Louisiana, Russell Wong, who said, everybody wants, don't tax me, don't tax me the tree. And they're going to be these high time.
How severe can they drive the recommendations coming out of the commission?
Well, first of all, any of the commission by its charter has to have 14 of the 18 persons who are members, 14 out of 18, which means it's bipartisan because it's evenly divided, 9 and 9.
Right.
So you're going to get what you're going to get when we see it tomorrow. We're going to see things that some real experts in the structure and financing of the government are on that commission. Most of them are on Capitol Hill, and they're the people who are members of the finance committees and the ways and means committees and the budget committees. These are experts. And whatever Bolton Simpson reports is going to be a pretty good bipartisan give and take, everybody having to everybody's got to put a little skin on the table.
So can we actually look to the commission to help drive a more civil tone in Congress when it comes to economic policy?
I don't know that it'll be more civil, but it may be more intelligent discussion, because we're going to have serious proposals that have been agreed to and vetted by a bipartisan group of experts.
Al?
I agree with Bob. I think this is not a magic wand. It's not going to land, and everybody say, oh, well, we'll do that. There'll be lots of argument on it coming from both sides of the political spectrum, but it will be setting up a target. I've always said it's easier to rewrite something than it is to come up with the initial draft. These guys will come up with the initial draft. That's the hard part. And they will make compromises and what have you. Now people will go in and rewrite it. Do they improve it or do they louse it out? That remains to be seen.
We've got a caller on the line from the 203 area code. Caller, you're on the air at Backroom Politics, live from Shelley's Backroom. Go ahead, caller.
Thank you. I was just would love to hear a discussion on whether or not there should be term limits for the House and the Senate members.
Wow, that's a huge question. The caller
limits?
Brings up term limits. Should there be term limits for the Senate? Bob, I'm going to go to you, caller. Thank you very much for calling in. Really appreciate your support. Please keep listening to us. Go ahead.
Ma'am, in response to your question, I would say that the fact of the matter is we already have a way to term limit a particular member of Congress, senator or congressman or woman. It's called the election. It's called the vote. I'm not so sure that it's a good idea to artificially remove people from Capitol Hill just because they've served, you know, say two terms in the Senate or four terms in the House and say that's all you can serve. There is no doubt that many members probably are a little bit too old, a little bit too tired to be as effective as they ought to be. But that's really a job for the folks back home. That's a job for the people who are the voters. And it's up to the voters to decide. And I would prefer the voters decide who is in Congress rather than having any artificial limitation.
Al, you know, you're being a former member of Congress, eight-term member of Congress, representing the Washington 2nd District. You left voluntarily. You retired from Congress after your eighth term. You know, you voluntarily term limited yourself out. Is that something that you view is the right way of doing it? Do the electorate have the power to term limit you?
I'm utterly opposed to term limits. And in fact, the reason that I care had a contract with Washington State that said all sitting members of Congress would get one more term out. And but I couldn't get any reporter. You can always tell whether a reporter's going to report anything you say by whether their channel goes down on the back. All my arguments and no pencils went down on any pad, and it's for a very good reason. I was simply trying to defend my ability to sit in Congress as long as I wanted. So getting past that, I went out and said, I will abide by what this is, win or lose, whether this wins or loses, I will sit one more term and I'm out. So it no longer affects me. Now listen to what I have to say about why it's a very bad idea. And people started to listen, and here's my basic argument. Our system is based upon the principle that individuals are smart enough to represent. And the argument, one of the big arguments of those who are in favor of term limits is those slick politicians, they call these fancy guys around, and they cloud your mind, and you're not capable of making decisions on your own, so we have to do it for you. 3 terms, and you're out. Well, if 3 terms and you're out is all you can trust the people with, then why not just 2 terms? Maybe the people aren't smart enough to do it the first time.
Well, you know, that brings up another topic that we talk about is one of the things that I've heard in the states that I've been involved with. The most blatant one is Florida, where they have implemented term limits. It's the legislators don't legislate; the staff legislates, and the staff becomes the more the more powerful organization.
And the lobbyists have more influence and so forth. I never found any of those arguments with the public. The one argument I found worked was this is a proposal that is based, they don't intend it, but it's based on the principle that you are too goddamn dumb to make decisions for yourself. Now, once you buy into that, you have bought into an argument that really rejects democracy. So that and he agrees with you, which is
unusual.
either people can be trusted or they can't. And if they can't be, then we need to find a different form of government, which will be decidedly unsmallly democratic.
Ralph, let me ask you. Does term limits itself inherently take away power from the legislative branch, or do you think that this is an initiative that if the populace want to move forward on, they're going to move forward on, regardless of whether it's good or not for the country? It's just something that they feel they're tired of politics the same way.
Well, I think people want to balance politics. But the problem is you need to develop a majority in order to understand the concept. And it's
okay.
Incumbent on members of Congress to punish their own.
Frank, what do you think?
My Republican friends will probably think I'm turned and been having too many of Al's martinis, but I feel that term limits are a bad thing in that it does get the balance of flow water. Whoever is getting their pick to get in. It should be, you don't like the guy if he's doing something wrong, if he's making the wrong decisions for your sector, your part of the country, vote him out. Okay? Put term limits on. That just means, yeah, there's new blood every 4 years or every 8 years. But don't like it. Vote him out. Them out.
Now, think about it. We've just had an election where over, something like about 80 new members, which is 20%, at least 20% of the House of Representatives has changed.
People
got pissed and they went out and they voted. That's they did a lot of term limiting, didn't they? They did a lot.
Someone telling me that he's going to be gone in 8 years just because of some number someone picked out. He's doing a good job. God bless him. Let him be like first.
Well, one of the issues that we've talked about around the table before the radio show has always been the influence of the current media. Now, we're fortunate enough that we've got two folks who have been actively involved in the politics and media. You know, does the media contribute to the uninformed electorate to help make the decision to go with or support term limits? Are they helping the situation or are they hindering, going off of 20-second sound bites of their politicians?
Well, I don't think that the media influences people nearly as much as I think. I've never, obviously, if the media is reporting that impacts on people's thoughts, actually. Most of the media talk in great detail about the member. I wish they did it more. It would be very nice to think all over the country on a Sunday afternoon if the congressman or the senator is back home that he is on the local television stations talking about what's happening in Congress and why it's happening and answering hard questions. I don't think it happens very often back home. And I'm happy that it doesn't do a better job. I think the media could do a much better job, but scandals and shocking things are more interesting often. It would be much more interesting if we actually had someone, let's say who was a member of the Transportation Committee, who was talking about what road money, what we're doing, what's the next 2 years going to look like in the country and in our area. That doesn't happen.
Well, there's so many reports. It's slanted one way. MSNBC does this way. Fox does it the other way. The roads, all you got to do is drive around in the back part and look at these bridges. That money needs to be designated for those problems.
Well, Al, as an award-winning broadcast, you are familiar with how the media covers politics. Is the media an undue influence on the electorate, or is it a red herring, as Bob points out?
All right, look at it this way.
Well, most of the major markets do.
Most of your major markets do. Everett, Washington, Mount Vernon, Washington, Port Angeles, Washington,
from the wires.
They get it from the wires. They get it from I'll wash my mouth out later. So the national news media, a very small group, are the wholesalers of national news. Your local media are the retailers, and they basically take what they send. So to tell me that a major reporter in Washington, D.C., doesn't have huge influence is to overlook the fact that he or she are the wholesalers of the news, and it is broadcast in the small v sense of the word to every town and village in the country. Yeah, they have a huge effect, and I think they do a lousy job.
Well, we're coming up on the last 5 minutes of the show, and I've always closed out the show with "Tell me something I don't know." It was pointed out to me by one of our listeners that I'm actually pillaging that from Chris Matthews and the Chris Matthews Show. I, giving credit to Chris Matthews, do not want to steal his thunder, because obviously we're a very powerful show now.
Yeah. And Chris is shaking.
And Chris, I'm sure, is running scared and talking to the executives at your old home turf. Whoever's got Vice President of Government Affairs now. But anyway, instead of saying, "Tell me something I don't know," I'm going to ask you, tell me a story. Bob, tell me a story.
About what?
The idea of telling me a story is that coming off something that not a lot of people know, a nice little piece of intelligence. Tell me a story, Bob.
I mean, I might have had one.
End of
20 Congress, 20 terms, 40 years.
40 years in the state of Wisconsin.
Yeah.
And is generally considered one of the most difficult in some ways, and one of the most brilliant in other ways, and one of the most positive members of the Congress of the liberal persuasion. He has called shots the way he saw them, and oftentimes that didn't please the Democratic Party. I think he may be the best example of why term limits would be bad. Now, I would tell you a story about him, and I know you can use any words you want on the internet or what have you, but I'm not going to. But he got into a pushing match with Tom DeLay.
That's this for the Republicans.
And you didn't have to prove you could use every word. Anyway, and they were separated and what have you, and I heard all the explanations, and it didn't sound right, because Dave Obie has one of the most marvelous lexicons of profanity in tongues, and I knew that he had said something to Delay that was not your grandma wears where's army boots, and I called his AA, and I said, what did he really say? And he told me, well, it, all I can say is it's something that no Texan could possibly take without fighting back.
Well, I can say as a Republican, I'm going to miss Dave Obie. Dave Obie's been one of the great statesmen in the House. He's represented the state of Wisconsin. It's he's a type of statesman. You know, he's proven he's gone both sides of the aisle. He's definitely an old school statesman that we definitely don't need to lose.
You know, we were talking about term limits just a few minutes ago.
Well, I had a little break in the transmission there. One of the things I do want to say is in the last bit,
I have my own blog talk show, but I don't have the power hitters that you have here. This is a Martin's discussion.
You mean you have less than 10 listeners?
Wow, I got to tell you, that's amazing.
I have myself, but this is what we need. Sitting down, civility, talking. I may not agree with you, but we agree to disagree and have a civil conversation.
Real quickly, last 15
seconds. Hello? Yeah, I'm here. Are you there? Can you hear me?
Ralph, we're done. We went above the line. Damn it. That was a good show.